Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police departments. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots. And next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact. Because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see 100,000, 600,000
deducted.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for two straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. Is who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor driven, the radio is sponsorship driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last ride. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking, And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change comes to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
Shit, dude. PTSD to your face. Shit, dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She's like you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
Kid, that nigga can't. That nigga hurting himself.
You from Nuke State.
It's over. It's over. What I say is over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
I ain't caught it. I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all. Real quick. Just like this one.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns. Because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we gotta bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity, and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-WAC movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening, because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
All right. Okay. We have expanded. We have an additional podcast to this podcast that we just basically put it up, got it online Saturday. We just did 3 minutes Saturday. Then last night we did 5 minutes, 5 to 8 minutes, something like that. But the name of the podcast is the title of today's live stream here on Blog Talk, because this podcast is titled Build Solar Homes. So the name of the new podcast, which we're seeing how the evening time goes, we'll do this one, which we've been doing for 10 and a half years in the AM, and then we'll do the new one Monday through Friday in the PM. If that doesn't work out, for whatever reason, then we'll, because I'm a morning person, we'll just maybe start at 10 a.m. And then we'll lead into this program at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time, which is just for your local time zone. So today's podcast is titled $2,500 Homes. $2,500 Homes, and that is the name of our brand new podcast in addition to this podcast. So $2,500 Homes will be on tonight here on Blog Talk Radio at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, 5:30 Central Standard Time, just for your local time zone, wherever you might be on the planet. But that's at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, 5:30 Central Standard Time in the United States. If you're outside of those two time zones, just adjust for whatever time zone based on the time zones I just gave. And what we now it's just going to be a 30-minute program. So at least for the first 30 days, no more than 30 minutes. So tonight what we're going to do is essentially we have a book, an e-book that we're putting together. It's going to be no more than 10 pages. So tonight we'll give you the working title of that book if you tune into it. And then we already have an outline. And we want to have it, we got like 15, 16 topics, but we just want it to be no longer than 10 pages, so that you can pick up, read, you got the nuggets, you got the instruction, and then just go ahead and put the action steps to it. So tonight, we'll go through the outline that we currently have, the working title that we currently have. Now, if you missed that podcast live stream tonight, that's okay, because tomorrow, during this time period, at our regular time period, what we still do is tell you what we got, take any suggestions from you guys on what you might want to see in it, because like it's going to be no more than a 10-page ebook, and then basically, we work the outline if we have to, because we already have an outline, but rework it if we have to, which I'm sure we will, put some content in it, and we'll within 2 hours, we should have the basic raw material of what we want, and then, of course, we'll cut, paste, add niches to it, or tweaks to it. That's the word I'm looking for, not niches, but tweaks. And then by the end of the week, we'll have a cover on it and front cover, back cover, and all that, and then it's ready to go out to the marketplace. So, like I said, if you missed tonight is just, we'll give you the title, the basic outline we got, but if you missed tonight, that's okay. That's why we're on twice a day now with two different podcasts. But and we're doing ebooks. Because it really doesn't take that long to put ebooks together, at least the way we're going to do them. 10-page ebooks. Something that you can read in one sitting, get the golden nuggets, and then put them in action. So tomorrow we'll take our time out and go into detail. Plus, take suggestions of information that you might want to have in that book. Also, we're going to attach, while we're doing that ebook tomorrow, because we're like going through the brainstorming and the composing part tomorrow for what we already have, then there'll be a live event attached to that. So it's not only the ebook, but then there'll be a live event or a live event attached to that ebook. All right. So, but the primary topic that'll be in there will be, the topic that we have for today's podcast, $2,500 homes. These are homes that people are on a budget for whatever reason they have built, and it could be anything from tiny houses or different type of tiny houses, the tree houses, the people who've taken their car and they've turned it into their home, school buses, vans, families that were on a budget. And the budget is $2,500. So that's why we call it $2,500 home. And that's a big market out there, bigger than a lot of people think. So, some people have $2,500 homes for them to live in for their personal use. Other people with a $2,500 home budget, they might do an Airbnb. So let's say they put together, matter of fact, we've done some podcasts on this. Somebody that might have, they bought a tent and they got some land that they rented. And for $2,500 or so, they rent out their tent. And within a matter of months or weeks, they've gotten their investment back because they just bought a tent. And some of those tents could be pimped out because you have yurts and then bell tents and there's glamping. But it's an infinite amount of things that you can do with $2,500. So that's what we call it, $2,500 home. So now we have some other things that'll go up the food chat ladder that are more, you know, that involve more than $2,500. But there's a lot out there at $2,500. And you would be surprised, a lot of those things are aesthetically pleasing, and you can use them for home use or, you know, entrepreneurial reasons. You know, that could be your side hustle. So you got $2,500. You and like I say, we'll do work. It's a 30-minute podcast tonight. We got it set for 30 minutes, but we'll probably do around 15-20 minutes, and then we'll come back tomorrow, and we got 2 hours allotted out where we want to do the whole shebang ebook. Titles reworked. I mean, chapter or title of the book. Rework the chapters because we already have an outline, so we want to cut that down to 10 chapters. In other words, each page is a chapter, and we have 15 right now outlined. So we're going to absorb some of those into what we have. Take any ideas from you guys. And then, you know, look at book cover. You know, what's the front of the book look like? What does the back of the book look like? And should there be pictures in there? And if so, which pictures? Okay, so like say tonight or tomorrow, we'll go into more expanded detail. On that note, we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Bye. What's up, guys? This is Alex Martin, and this is the Content Creator Podcast, where I stimulate your mind and show you how to market your grind. And today, we're going to stimulate your mind. I got the legend, the icon, Freeway Rick Ross. How you doing today, bro?
I'm good. How you?
I'm good, bro. Can't complain.
No doubt. No doubt.
I can't lie, man. Right now, I'm like, I got the jitters, you know.
I see you geeked.
Yeah, I'm excited. And first, I want to say thank you. Like, you didn't have to come here, and yet you did it, man. So I appreciate it.
Oh, come on, man. This is how I do. You know, everybody's important.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's movement is important.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out. Took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Okay, let me make this announcement. We are building a network, and we're using meetup groups to do it, which is boots on the ground. We can do boots on the ground as well as virtual meetings using meetup groups. So, and we like to do one in your neck of the woods. All right, and I'm looking for five markets right now. Five markets, actually, yeah, five or four because I'm one of them. All right, so if you're interested, and what we want to do is we lead a local boots on the ground host or hostess, and they will sponsor, they will be in charge of our local meetup group meetings, And there will also be de facto pizza parties. There will be food and refreshments or refreshments served at each one of these events. And I'll tell you how that's all put together. So if you're interested, give me a call or text at 425-292-8768. Okay, 425-292-8768. That's the number to call. What other audio did I want to? Oh, yeah, I know what I was looking for. All right, we've got a few minutes left today. Remember to tune into our podcast tonight for our other program, which is titled $2,500 Homes. We do a book outline tonight, just a rough outline. Tomorrow we come back here and do the whole book. You know, so we'll have a rough draft by the end of tomorrow's podcast. We're setting aside 2 hours to do that tomorrow. So if you want to be a part of that and put in your input, let us know.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
Hey, call me Louis. This is my spot.
Is the main character in Americana based on you to any great extent?
Maybe yeah. Not.
I think one of the wonderful things about doing things of this sort after writing fiction is when you're writing fiction, you're not really thinking. I mean, there's a lot that's unconscious. There's a lot that's... And then afterwards, you have to invent answers to questions like this. So depending on my mood, I'll say, yeah.
One in a Million, the history of Madam C.J. Walker and her entrepreneurial legacy. Not even her poor and difficult beginnings stymied Madam Walker's road to greatness. born December 23, 1867, roughly 2 years after the alleged emancipation of her race. She was an orphan at 7, a wife at 14, a mother at 17, and a widow by 20. The woman who would become known as the first self-made female millionaire and the greatest benefactress of her race was born the daughter of Owen and Minerva Breedlove, poor ex-slaves living on a cotton farm in Louisiana. They named their special little girl Sarah Breedlove. A washerwoman by trade, at the age of 33 in 1900, Sarah began selling a product door to door which she had formulated to remedy her own hair loss. She pinpointed the root of
town of Barry, southeast of Quincy, a group of dedicated volunteers has kept alive the history of New Philadelphia. Established during the 1830s, it's the story of one man's dedication, hard work, and drive. On a windswept field, these posts, left by an archaeological investigation, reveal the location of buildings that once made up a town founded as a path to freedom.
New Philadelphia was a dream of an African-American man named Free Frank McWhorter. He came here in 1832 from Kentucky. He was the son of a slave owner and a slave. Free Frank had enough freedom that allowed him to work in a saltpeter mine, actually, that he worked at and sold saltpeter from, is how he earned a lot of his extra money.
Frank used his earnings to invest in Kentucky land, and then something else more precious, freedom. At first he bought his wife out of slavery since she was pregnant so that their child would be born free, and then he paid for his own freedom.
Free Frank got this land from in trading his own land that he owned in Kentucky. He had at one time 600 acres of land. New Philadelphia is a town that he platted and sold lots to earn more money, to earn more family members, to buy their way out of slavery.
So far as we know, New Philadelphia is the first town legally platted and legally recorded by a black person in the United States.
The main road coming into town was a platted road, and it divides the town almost in half, the road that's coming into it now.
Well, as I understand it, New Philadelphia had a post office, blacksmith shop, and later, late 1800s, a general store, a tavern, a stopping off place for travelers. Now those are, that's what we hear, some of that's just local oral history.
New Philadelphia was an integrated community. The 1850 census, which records, in fact, there were more white households than there were black, as I recall the numbers, and there was at least one white individual living in a black household, and at least one black individual living in a white household. It was an integrated community, and so far as we know, it was generally peaceful.
Blacks and whites both lived there. Before the Civil War, which is highly unusual, being 20 miles from Missouri, which was a slave state.
Not far away on a wooded hill, volunteers, along with Frank's descendants, have cleared the cemetery where Frank, along with family members, were laid to rest. In the end, he liberated 16 family members from slavery before his death in 1854.
New Philadelphia Association has had the privilege of meeting a number of Free Frank's descendants, fifth generation McWhorters.
I think Frank McWhorter would be extremely proud of his descendants today. Those that we know are in largely in academic work, legal work, in business. They believe in public service. But there are lessons here on terms of the regional history, the very specific history of New Philadelphia. And I think for succeeding generations to have a place where they can say, yes, before the Civil War even, there were Americans who lived together and got along peacefully.
Plans are currently underway to establish a visitor center and living history village so future generations may know the story of Free Frank, his family, and the town he founded to free them.
And so I would like to have met that man because he persevered. He, above all, he bought his family so that they could be free.
I think there will always be something to learn from this site.
To find out more of the history of or directions to New Philadelphia, log on to their website at www.newphiladelphiailinois.org.
Okay, all right. Today's podcast is titled $2,500 Homes, and we have, this is a promotion program because we have two podcasts now. This podcast is titled Build Solar Homes. Okay, and it's a rebranded name. Our original name was It's My House. We've got a tad bit over 2,600 podcasts archived here on Blog Talk Radio covering all kind of topics. But we rebranded ourselves to Build Solar Homes. In addition to that, all right, in line with today's live stream title for this podcast, we have another podcast which comes on in the PM. We just rolled it out Saturday. We just did 3 minutes on Saturday, about 5 minutes on last night. And tonight we'll do, it's a 30-minute podcast. It's titled, which is the title of this podcast, titled today, $2,500 Homes. So if you got a budget of $2,500, you need a place to stay, there's a variety of homes that you can put together for $2,500. So featuring people that might live in their car, they might get in a van and pimp that out, a school bus and pimp that out, or a stick-built home, or a tree house, or something made from cob or adobe. There's a lot of variety of homes for $2,500. All right, you're not going to find them in Beverly Hills, California, but that's okay. So we're going to tonight, and that's at 30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday. Now, if you miss tonight, because tonight we're going to do a book outline. We've got an outline for a book already, so we're going to roll out what we have, and along with the working title chapters. All right, and then tomorrow at this time, okay, we're going to essentially write the book. It'll be rough draft, but write the book. All right, here's a call to action I'm putting out before we log off for this morning. We're looking for boots on the ground partners. Because what we want to do is establish a meetup group network where we can have live events, boots on the ground, face-to-face. And for those who can't make it, you know, meetup is teamed up with Zoom. They can attend the meetings virtually through Zoom. So I'm looking for four people as part of my starting five. I'm the first one, so to make us full starting five, we need four more boots on the ground players. We'll be doing pizza parties, weekend retreats, and that type of thing. So, so if you're interested in that, being in your neck of the woods, contact me direct by phone or text. the number, 425-292-8768. That's 425-292-8768. Call, text me. I'll get back to you. We're looking for four more people to be boots on the ground for our meetup group network that we are now officially organizing. See tonight, or for if you want to be on our book writing of $2,500 homes, or like say tomorrow, if you miss tonight, we'll be here for 2 hours tomorrow on $2,500 homes. On that note, have a great day.
At Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking car off business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.
Morning people wake up for peace and quiet. McDonald's breakfast people, we wake up for the sweet rush of getting that warm, delicious breakfast right before it ends.
Crush your morning goals with a steak, egg, and cheese bagel or any breakfast sandwich and snag another one for just a buck with the buy one, get one deal. Only in the McDonald's app. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid once per day. Must opt into rewards.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.